Hello, everyone. Good morning. Hope you are doing well. Welcome to St. John's, our virtual church experience for today. And I got my family, since we've been sitting around at home with nothing to do, Hello, Ryan. Hello, Abby. We're going to sing All Creatures of Our God and King together, and you are welcome to sing along if you want. I will give you just a second to go out and find some lyrics, because I probably couldn't sing them without them either. But anyway, hey, Gianna, do you want to say hi? You want to say hi? Say good morning. So, yeah, here we go. All Creatures of Our God and King. Thank you, family. That was very kind of you. Gianna, good job. Way to go. Ryan, can you put this guitar back in my case, please? Thank you. Yes, it is. Bigger than you. Over on the couch. All right. So, a totally different reality than most of us were expecting for this week. I don't know about you, but I did not see this coming. Who knew? Let me pull up my sermon here. It has been a very crazy week, and yeah. Our two texts today are about seeing, and I think it's pretty appropriate. I was trying to decide whether to use the text from the lectionary or come up with something different, since the world is a very different place right now than most of us were expecting, but the two texts today are incredibly relevant and I think helpful and hopeful for us as we go through something that most of us didn't see coming. So anyway, our first text is, our Old Testament reading is from 1 Samuel chapter 16, verses 1 through 13. And I'll read that first. I miss having a lectionary person here because, yeah, I have to do all the work myself, but that's all right. We'll get through it. 1 Samuel 16, 1 through 13. Now the Lord said to Samuel, "You have mourned long enough for Saul. I have rejected him as king of Israel. So fill your flask with olive oil and go to Bethlehem. Find a man named Jesse who lives there, for I have selected one of his sons to be my king." But Samuel asked, "How can I do that? If Saul hears about it, he will kill me." "Take a heifer with you," the Lord replied, "and say that you have come to make a sacrifice to the Lord. Invite Jesse to the sacrifice, and I will show you which of his sons to anoint for me." So Samuel did as the Lord instructed. When he arrived at Bethlehem, the elders of the town came trembling to meet him. "What's wrong?" he asked. "Do you come in peace?" "Yes," Samuel replied. "I have come to sacrifice to the Lord. Purify yourselves and come with me to the sacrifice." Then Samuel performed the purification rite for Jesse and his sons and invited them to the sacrifice too. When they arrived, Samuel took one look at Eliab and thought, "Surely this is the Lord's anointed." But the Lord said to Samuel, "Don't judge by his appearance or height, for I have rejected him. The Lord doesn't see things the way you see them. People judge by outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart." Then Jesse told his son Abinadab to step forward and walk in front of Samuel. But Samuel said, "This is not the one the Lord has chosen." Next, Jesse summoned Shimeah, but the Lord said, "Neither is this the one the Lord has chosen." In the same way, all seven of Jesse's sons were presented to Samuel. But Samuel said to Jesse, "The Lord has not chosen any of these." Then Samuel asked, "Are these all the sons you have?" "There is still the youngest," Jesse replied, "but he's out in the fields watching the sheep and the goats." "Send for him at once," Samuel said. "We will not sit down to eat until he arrives." So Jesse was sent for him. He was dark and handsome with beautiful eyes. And the Lord said, "This is the one. Anoint him." So as David stood there among his brothers, Samuel took the flask of olive oil he had brought and anointed David with the oil. And the Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon David from that day on. Then Samuel returned to Ramah. And our New Testament text is from John chapter 9, verses 1 through 41. Oh man, I'm going to spend the first 10 minutes of this just reading. But that's all right. It's a really good story. This is also a story about seeing. John 9, 1 through 41. As Jesus was walking along, he saw a man who had been blind from birth. "Rabbi," his disciples asked him, "why was this man born blind? Was it because of his own sins or his parents' sins?" "It was not because of his sins or his parents' sins," Jesus answered. "This happened so the power of God would be seen in him. We must quickly carry out the tasks assigned us by the one who sent us. The night is coming, and then no one can work. But while I am here in the world, I am the light of the world." Then he spit on the ground, made mud with saliva, and spread the mud over the man's eyes. He told him, "Go and wash yourself in the pool of Siloam." Siloam means sent. So the man went and washed and came back seeing. His neighbors and others who knew him as a blind beggar asked each other, "Isn't this the man who used to sit and beg?" Some said he was. Others said, "No, he just looks like him." But the beggar kept saying, "Yes, I am the same one." They asked, "Who healed you? What happened?" He told them, "The man they called Jesus made mud and spread it over my eyes and told me, 'Go to the pool of Siloam and wash yourself.' So I went and washed, and now I can see." "Where is he now?" they asked. "I don't know," he replied. Then they took the man who had been blind to the Pharisees, because it was on the Sabbath that Jesus made the mud and healed him. The Pharisees asked the man all about it, so he told them, "He put mud over my eyes, and when I washed it away, I could see." Some of the Pharisees said, "This man Jesus is not from God, for he is working on the Sabbath." Others said, But how could an ordinary sinner do such miraculous signs? So there was a deep division of opinion among them. Then the Pharisees again questioned the man who'd been blind and demanded, "What's your opinion about this man who healed you?" The man replied, "I think he must be a prophet." The Jewish leaders still refused to believe the man had been blind and could now see. So they called his parents. They asked him, "Is this your son? Was he born blind? If so, how can he now see?" His parents replied, "We know this is our son and that he was born blind, but we don't know how he can see or who healed him. Ask him. He is old enough to speak for himself." His parents said this because they were afraid of the Jewish leaders, who had announced that anyone saying Jesus was the Messiah would be expelled from the synagogue. That's why they said, "He is old enough. Ask him." So for the second time, they called in the man who had been blind and told him, "God should get the glory for this, because we know this man Jesus is a sinner." "I don't know whether he is a sinner," the man replied, "but I know this. I was blind, and now I can see." "But what did he do?" they asked. "How did he heal you?" "Look," the man exclaimed, "I told you once. Didn't you listen? Why do you want to hear it again? Do you want to become his disciples too?" Then they cursed him and said, "You are his disciple, but we are disciples of Moses. We know God spoke to Moses, but we don't even know where this man comes from." "Why, that's very strange," the man replied. "He healed my eyes, and yet you don't know where he comes from? We know that God doesn't listen to sinners, but he is ready to hear those who worship him and do his will. Ever since the world began, no one has been able to open the eyes of someone born blind. If this man were not from God, he couldn't have done it." "You were born a total sinner," they answered. "Are you trying to teach us?" And they threw him out of the synagogue. When Jesus heard what had happened, he found the man and said, "Do you believe in the Son of Man?" The man answered, "Who is he, sir? I want to believe in him." "You have seen him," Jesus said, "and he is speaking to you." "Yes, Lord, I believe," the man said, and he worshiped Jesus. Then Jesus told him, "I entered this world to render judgment, to give sight to the blind, and to show those who think they see that they are blind." Some Pharisees who were standing nearby heard him and asked, "Are you saying we're blind?" "If you were blind, you wouldn't be guilty," Jesus replied, "but you remain guilty because you claim you can see." And this is the text for today. What do we see? How do we know we see it? I was in seminary, and it was in Michigan, and my mom lived in Lincoln, Nebraska at the time. And I went home for, I don't remember when it was. I went home to visit at some point, and my family had a wonderful tradition of having stew on Friday nights in the winter. And we made the same recipe almost every week. We usually had a bunch of people over. We made stew and cornbread. And I got home before my mom on that Friday afternoon. And she said, "Dan, I would really like it if you could..." We all had our jobs. It was mine usually to start peeling the potatoes and chopping the carrots. And the first thing you had to do was get the cornbread in because it took an hour to bake. So she said, "If you get home, if you could mix up the cornbread and put it in the oven, that would be so helpful." I said, "Sure, no problem. I'll get right on it." So I started looking through the cupboards, and I could not find cornbread mix anywhere. We always had the same cornbread mix. It was Marie Callender's. Maybe some of you have made this too, but you know, it comes in a yellow bag and has a little picture of Marie Callender on the front. And that's just what we use. And I looked through every cupboard in my mom's entire kitchen and couldn't find cornbread mix anywhere. And I called my mom and asked her, "Mom, are you sure you have cornbread mix? I don't think we have any." And she said, "Yes, Dan, I'm quite sure. I got some last week. It's there." I went and looked again. No cornbread mix. High, low, behind things, under things, in things. I couldn't find any cornbread mix. Called my mom back. "Mom, sure you have cornbread mix. I can't find any anywhere." She's like, "It's in the cupboard to the left of the stove. Look on top. I'm almost sure it's there." I went back. Couldn't find anything. Finally, she walks in, opens the cupboard, and pulls out a blue box of cornmeal and cornbread mix that looks entirely different than the one I was looking for. It had been there all along, but I missed it entirely because I was looking for something different than what was. These two texts are very much about what we're looking for and how we see. The text from 1 Samuel is a favorite kid story about how Jesse's sons, I mean, one, this is a time of incredible tumult and uncertainty, right? Like Saul is being a bad king and God is calling someone else to lead. But Samuel feels like he's kind of trapped as what to do about this, that he can't really speak up or say anything or he'll get killed. But God calls him to go to Jesse's family. And he starts looking at Jesse's kids and is really impressed with Eliab. He looks like a king. And God says, nope, this isn't the guy. I'm picking somebody else. And he goes down the line until he gets to the youngest, who, by the way, is doing what? Out in a field watching sheep. In the ancient world, the lowest class of people were shepherds. It was the worst job because you were with the sheep and you smelled like the sheep and it wasn't considered important and anybody could do it. And David is out there with the sheep, and this is who God has chosen to make an incredible and powerful difference with his people. He flat out tells Samuel, Samuel, you're looking with human eyes. God sees things very differently. He looks at what's underneath, not just the surface and the way things appear, but the way things could be, the way things are underneath everything else. This is such a beautiful story about how Spirit is at work in us and around us, that it's not about the things we can see all the time, but sometimes the things underneath are even more powerful and more impactful and matter most. The story of the man born blind in John 9 is an incredible connection to this story as well, because being able to see is so important to our lives, and what we actually experience as life depends so much on our perspective, on how we choose to look at it. You may have heard of the 80-20 rule, that life is 20% what happens to you and 80% what you think about what happens to you. I think it might even be a 90-10 rule, that we determine so much of our actual experience based on how we choose to look at things as opposed to what actually happens. I mean, we're in the middle of an incredible pandemic right now, a lockdown, which we could view as the end of everything that we've been trying to do and messing everything up. Or we could view it as an incredible breather, a break, a rest, a chance to regather and reevaluate our lives, our world, our systems and structures, how we've constructed our economy, how we've constructed our social systems, our churches. The way we are gathering this morning is very different than a traditional church service, but it matters no less. And in a time where so much is uncertain, being together matters so much more. Also in the ancient world, any sort of defect or illness was viewed as a result of your sin. Or, you know, if you sin bad enough, maybe you'd pass on some of these curses to your kids. And it is into that context that Jesus walking along, by the way, another fun fact about this story in John, John only tells 7 miracles. He picks 7 on purpose because the book of John is incredibly deep, profound, mystical, and thematic. And John uses each one of the 7 miracles he describes about Jesus, not to point to the miracle itself, but to point towards the incredible reality underneath it. This story about a man being born blind is not just about this man. It is a story about all of our blindness. It is a story about Jesus coming to be the light of the world, a story about Jesus coming to open all of our eyes. Now, the disciples and the Pharisees, coming across this man who'd been blind from birth, obviously wondered and assumed that this was a case of him having sinned. He did something wrong, and that led to this problem in his life. They asked Jesus, important question here, did this guy sin in utero and that's why he was born blind, or did his parents just sin so much that he's bearing their curse? Jesus' answer is profound. I think this whole story hinges on this. This is some of that light God is seeking to shine into our lives. Jesus says this didn't happen, neither. This happened so that the power of God might be displayed in his life. Think about that for a minute. The bad things in the world weren't a result of his parents' sin or his own. but rather they are opportunities for healing, growth, transformation, God's glory to be displayed. What if we looked at the challenging things in the world as opportunities for healing, for growth, for transformation, for God's glory to be revealed? What if these things we're going through right now aren't primarily, I'm going to get started. I have no time for those people who are saying that this is God's judgment on the world. I mean, one, if that's true, God hates old people, which I don't think is true. Two, this is not the sort of God Jesus came to reveal at all. This story shows a God who is willing to step into places where there are hurt and deficiency and bring light, healing, sight, connection. Jesus stops and intimately connects with this man. He spits on the ground, makes mud, puts it on his eyes. Kind of bizarre, but a crazy... They believe saliva had healing powers for sight back then too. The man goes and washes in the pool of Siloam, which John makes an effort and goes out of his way to make sure we understand means something. It means sent. Jesus sends this man to go wash, and he is sending his disciples. He's trying to open all of their eyes. He comes back, and the man can see. It's an incredible miracle. He was born blind. Now he sees. The Pharisees, of course, are very frustrated by this because they live their lives trying to be perfect, trying to avoid sin. And what just happened was sin. Jesus worked on Sabbath. He broke the law. And they are so much more concerned about that than they are about bringing healing and restoration to this man's life that they quickly categorize Jesus as a sinner, an enemy on the bad side. I love the interactions between the man and the Pharisees and his parents. The Pharisees just keep badgering and pestering them. And the man finally replies, "Are you going to be his disciples too?" At which point they curse him. And he replies, "I don't know anything except that I was blind and now I see." This is what God is up to in our lives. I think more than anything else, and John is trying to make this point here, that it's not just about the miracle of physical sight here, but that the main point is that God is trying to help all of us see more clearly from a bigger perspective. Claiming to have it all figured out on any level is incredibly dangerous because it makes us even more blind. We don't know what we don't know. And this is a story about being humble enough to open our eyes to whatever might actually be. That it might be something very different than we were expecting. That the cornbread might be in a blue box instead of a yellow Marie Callender's bag. Who knew? We never will find out unless we are willing to open our eyes to what we don't know yet. This is a story about changing how we see and what we are looking at. Because the Pharisees and the disciples are very much focused on sin. And Jesus is calling them to look at the world and their own lives as something very different, as opportunities, as chances to live out love and kindness and compassion, to bring healing and love and acceptance wherever we go. Focusing on sin is not how Jesus teaches us to live. Rather, focusing on life. Where can we bring healing, wisdom, compassion, and love? It is so easy to get focused on whatever is wrong with the world. And as we know, our brains tend to be very, very good at helping us find what we're looking for. And this is a story about looking for love, not looking for sin. The kingdom of God is not built on sin avoidance, but rather on love, seeking to make the world better for everyone we can. This can be a really big shift for us. As opposed to spending our lives focused on ourselves, even and especially if it is on getting rid of our own sin, looking for the bad things in us, we are called to spend our lives looking for opportunities to bring love and healing to the people around us and ourselves. There's a huge impact of opening our eyes, of changing our perspective in this way. If we think that we and others are inherently bad, we're going to see all sorts of bad in us and others. On the other hand, if we think that we each bear the image of God, and that means my neighbors do too, we are going to be so much more inclined to find that good, to help each other, to step up and do the right thing, to bring help and healing and compassion and care. This is so powerful with what we are going through in our world right now. If we come in with a narrative that it's all going to go to Lord of the Flies as soon as something gets bad, then we turn into preppers who need 3 years of food and lots of ammunition in our basements. On the other hand, if we believe that we as human beings do bear the image of God, that Spirit is at work in every single one of us, moving us towards each other, towards helping and caring and taking care of one another, then this changes everything about how we respond in a crisis like this. There's all sorts of evidence, actually, that these crises tend to bring out the best in us as human beings. I've seen so many stories of this past week, people going out and getting food for their neighbors, people taking care of one another, being kind and compassionate, doing whatever we can to work together and care for one another. By the way, I just read a piece last week that was an archaeologist talking about the first evidence of human civilization. And her response was not agriculture or tools or writing, but a femur, a human femur that had been broken and found to be healed. In the natural world, she says, a broken leg is the end of any animal that breaks its leg. You can no longer get to water. You can no longer escape hunters. You're over if you break your leg. But the first human femurs found that were broken and healed are evidence of a society that cared for that person. When they fell and were injured, other people decided to make sure they could still get water, they could still get food, that they were protected from predators. This is indeed what we are here for. What we are doing for each other is taking care of one another, looking for the injury and damage and things in the world that we wish weren't there as opportunities to step up and care for one another, to be there for each other, to make the world better. The traditional Christian dogma of original sin is so misguided, so unbiblical, and so harmful to us as human beings. If we believe that we are bad and other people are bad, it's going to damage so much of our own souls, of our way we interact with the other human beings around us. And it's simply not true. The story starts out in Genesis 1 insisting that a good God created a good world with good people in it, that we bear this image of God himself. If God is out there bringing compassion and healing, seeing those who others reject as being sinful and outside the box, and we're saying we're going to do whatever we can to bring love and healing to those people, this is what it means to be sent. This is the whole point of Jesus trying to open our eyes. Guys, there's something so much more important for you to do than go around looking for sin. I'm calling you to go out into the world to be light, to bring hope, to bring kindness and compassion. We need to remember that whatever moment we are in right now is part of a much bigger story. Every good story has its ups and downs. Every really good story has points in the plot where everything can seem hopeless. But the way we respond at those points, at these points right now, determines everything about the story, right? We don't get to choose the circumstances of our lives so often, but we always get to choose our response. What is Jesus calling you to? Where might God be seeking to open your eyes? What might you have been blind to, and what opportunities to bring glory to God, to bring healing and love, might there be for you right now? Photo popped up in my Facebook feed today. It was from 3 years ago, and it was a stack of books I was reading, sitting on the coffee table in our old house. Oh, man, it was 3 years ago. All those books are gone. That house is gone, because a year later, the campfire came through and burned all of it up. And I didn't see that coming. I had no idea how much my life, my family's life, would change on November 8, 2018. We all assume that life is going to keep going the way it is now. And as the campfire revealed and this past week has revealed for us, life so often does not go the way we expect. Things happen that we don't see coming, and they are always opportunities for us to open our lives and learn more about ourselves, about God, about this world, what it means, what we can do, how we can help, how we can continue to grow and adapt. How are we going to step up and respond to this pandemic? We can choose to react to it negatively and look for all the bad in it, or we can take every opportunity to look for what we can do to help create a better world, for what we can do to take better care of each other, to structure an economy that takes better care of the people around us, and how to choose our own actions in the midst of that. I think this is an opportunity for us to practice our own resilience of being able to take a hit and get back up again, to learn from what we're going through and respond in ways that are positive. Because as this illustrates, we are all in this together. Anybody can get anybody else sick. It doesn't matter how much money you have or don't have. Anybody can help take care of anybody else. We all get to reach out to one another to be there. We all get to start opening our eyes and learning how to see more clearly, focusing our attention on how to help people instead of what might be wrong. So I would love to engage a little more with you on this. And I think this format of church gives us an opportunity that we don't maybe have in regular church to actually have some discussion. So if you have any questions about the text or the discussion today, and you're watching right now, feel free to type them in, and I'm going to start paying attention to the feed here and seeing if I can respond and we can actually have a dialogue together. Good to see you here, Carolyn and Jan and Tom and Jamie and Amanda. I should have warned people earlier on that I wanted to do this. Then you could have been thinking about questions while I was reading. Anybody have any thoughts? Oh, hey, Holly! Yay! Make this a little more interactive. Cornbread. Yes, you can do that. Hey, Kim. What do you think we might be blind to as a society as we're going through this? Or what might we be able to see because of this that we didn't see 2 weeks ago? I thought things were much more robust than they actually were. Wow. Anyway, anybody else have thoughts, questions, observations? Oh, it's my mom. Hey, Mom. Yeah, this has greatly changed. Man, talk about how we experience time and our priorities of what we do with it. I'm just speaking for myself, but I am so focused on getting things done every day that I kind of just see a day as either an opportunity or an obligation to accomplish a bunch of things. And having to slow down like this is an amazing opportunity to reevaluate what I spend my time on, that I think I actually do squander a lot of time questing after accomplishing things instead of just savoring being alive. Yeah. How uneven our system is. Man, ain't that the truth? My wife, for one, had a incredibly successful, thriving business 2 weeks ago that kind of doesn't exist now. It's amazing how many human beings in our current economy are so close to the edge, and everything works fine when things are going well, but man, as soon as everything stops, life can get really tough really fast. And I think it's a huge call to open our eyes to what we can do to structure our world in ways that take better care of each other. Yeah. Also important to make sure we're keeping in touch with each other. And I think I called through 3/4 of the list of the church last week, and I'll get the rest finished off this week. But let's do everything we can to keep in contact with each other and make sure we know that we're not alone. Even if we are in isolation, we get a chance to still reach out with our hearts, with our words. I love all the people I've seen out walking and just being kind and friendly, because we all have so much more time just to show up for our own lives right now. Well, I think I will respond to some more questions. We can continue the discussion, but I don't need to keep yammering on. Let's close with a prayer and maybe sing Amazing Grace if I can recruit some of my family. Let me check on that. Hang on. I'll be right back. Hey, you guys want to come sing Amazing Grace with me? Please? Somebody? Heather. You don't have to be on screen. God, we gather together, even if from afar, because we recognize that we need you and we need each other. Our hearts and minds go out to one another, to our world, to all the people suffering in response to this unprecedented pandemic. We pray for courage, for patience, for wisdom, for compassion. We want your spirit to flow through us too, to connect us, to open our eyes that we might see. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power and the glory forever. Amen. All right, everybody, have a great week. Stay well. Wash your hands, wipe your nose, and I'll do a thing midweek this week. So check back, and I'll do a Facebook Live on Wednesday at some point. And miss you guys. Hope you're all doing well, and love you all immensely. Take care.